96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. Your questions or comments, toll free at 855-288-4876. Now, Insight.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. The Seed Public Charter School in Southeast D.C. will remain closed for the rest of the week following the death of a 12-year-old female student. Police say 7th grader Stormaya Denson Jackson was found early yesterday inside her dorm room after taking her own life. This is the latest in what appears to be a growing trend of black children committing suicide. Well, joining me tonight are child psychologist Dr. Jeff Menzies and Lisa Daughtry, a mental health advocate who lost her teenage son to suicide. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Dr. Menzies and Lisa, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for the invite here.
Now, according to a 2015 study in the Journal of the American Medical Association Pediatrics, suicide rates among elementary age black children have nearly doubled since 1990. The suicide rates among white children have fallen. Now, researchers list risk factors as exposure to violence, traumatic stress, early onset puberty, and aggressive school discipline. We should say that it's been reported that parents of some of the students at the school, at Seed School, say bullying is a problem there. But also today, the Seed School released a statement saying that safety and security of students is their top priority, and they have stringent procedures to protect their students. When you look at this situation on the face of it and what this study is suggesting, Dr. Menzies, what's going on with black children?
You know, this is a heartbreaking story, and I want to say my prayers and thoughts going out to the family and the friends of this young lady. It's just a tragic situation all around, and looking at these trends and the increase, you know, because actually between the ages of 10 to 14, they say the rates are actually tripling. And while still relatively low, it should be cause for an alarm. I think that what's happening right now is a combination of the bullying. It's a combination of bullying in conjunction with social media. The fact that these children are in boarding school means that they're away from home. And so their direct familial support networks aren't present with them at the time, you know, 24/7. In fact, I think they are 24/5, meaning they got 5 days a week.
Exactly. Yeah, just during
the
week, and they go home on the weekends.
Yeah. And so, you know, when you have a young child that's out there in this world by themselves like that, you know, and they don't really have people who they can lean on, they can depend on, that shares blood with them. You know, although you can make these strong bonds in these environments, it's still a really, really tough situation. I mean, they're introduced to so many different things at this point in time through media, through technology. And so we just got to really be careful with our babies and make sure we're instilling as much love and self-confidence in them as possible to at least help them to buffer against the bullying, and especially, you know, to the extreme where they're trying to take their own lives, you know.
And let me say to both of you, but I'll start with Lisa. Mm-hmm. Bullying has been around as long as human beings.
Yeah.
And yet we're seeing, according to this study, and we could even speak anecdotally, that we are seeing an increase in, you know, suicides, children in general, black children specifically, or attempted suicides. So is it specifically the bullying, or is it how we are teaching our children to address this or not address it?
Harold, I think for Afro-American community, it's still a taboo. We are not addressing as far as dealing with depression, dealing with as far as economy, what's going on with our family economy-wise and everything. But also, I think social media also is keeping our children entertained. And with that being said, I'm noticing anything goes on social media.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Anything goes on social media. And it's like now, anything can be said, anything can be done, and it's like no one has a heart, no one has a soul as far as to understand that you just there's morals, there's values that you have to respect somebody's space, somebody as far as being a human being. When I was reading the article earlier before coming here, the young girl was being bullied because she was a nerd. She loved math and science. Why is it getting to that point where this child cannot enjoy her academics now? She has to fear as far as when she goes around the corner, who's going to talk about her?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, that it saddened me a lot just reading that.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about Black children and suicide. This comes just a day after a 12-year-old girl at a boarding school here in Washington, D.C., took her own life. If you have a question, if you have a comment, give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Barbara, calling from Rockville. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, good evening and happy Thursday to everyone. This really touches my heart because I have a grandson that I now have custody of, who went to school, told the school what was going on, and they chose to have a blind eye. Mm. It wasn't just the bullying from the kids, because he didn't have that issue. The issue was the bullying with the teacher with the pen, and it was the bullying at home. The bullying at home from a stepfather who couldn't accept his lifestyle. And we're talking about a straight-A honor student, presidential recipient, highest honors. I'm talking a kid who is excellent in school. You do not know how it took plenty of resources for me to get his mind back on track, because he just was just willing to take his life at any point in time. It didn't matter.
Barbara, let me stop you. How do you know that? Did he have a conversation with you?
Yes.
How do you know?
Yes. I kept lines of communications open with him. His mother removed him out of the state so that we couldn't have contact, but because I pay his cell phone bill, we were able to keep in contact in that sense.
How is he now? And how old is he?
He's 17 years old.
Uh-huh.
He is 100, and I won't say 110% better, but I would say that he is 100% better than he was 6 months ago.
Okay.
He's put on weight.
Okay.
He was starving himself. He was dehydrating himself. Mm. He was sheltering himself. He was wearing dark clothing.
Okay.
He wouldn't come out of the room unless he was called out of the room. He wouldn't speak unless he was spoken to.
Well, let me stop you there, Barbara, because I want to make sure that I have a Dr. Menzies take a professional look at what you've described, because you've given us a lot. So certainly thank you so much for sharing with us. What were you hearing, Dr. Menzies? It seems, and I'm sure it's much more complicated, but it seems, based on what Barbara was sharing, remove a child out of a difficult environment and they'll be better. Mm. But what are you hearing?
So I want to congratulate you, Barbara, you know, and applaud you for stepping in, you know, for your grandchild. I mean, that's amazing work that you've done there. And yes, so what happens is that she helped to remove him from the toxic environment, from where the pressure, remove him as much as she could from the toxicity. And that way it puts a ton of a buffer from the continuation of the abuse. Mm-hmm. That's what bullying is. It's abusive. And so she removed him from a lot of the abuse in order that she can begin to kind of treat, and by way of giving him tools, giving him support, giving him love to where he feels like it's okay to be who he is, you know, be okay within his own skin. And so it's twofold. You know, you cut off the assault, and then you begin to nurture and rebuild the child and help them to be strong enough to stand on their own feet. And so some of the things that she was describing are symptoms of depression, you know, staying in his room, the dark clothes, not speaking, not eating, not drinking. And so that's a part of a slow suicide, to where he's just going to kind of wither away because he feels like his value is nothing in this world. And so why be here? And so you find that some people would do that, as opposed to going the quote unquote quicker routes with gunshots and some of the more aggressive ways of doing it. They just fade out and fade to black. And had he still been in a toxic environment that she removed him from, he may have done just that. You know, just fade to black. Don't eat, don't drink, get to a point to where maybe he can then pop a couple of pills and then just go away, mm-hmm. you know, pretty easily. I mean, it's just amazing. I'm glad that she had the awareness mm-hmm. because that's what's missing a lot of times. And then one other thing she really that brought up that's really important is that these were adults that were also bullying him. So sometimes we like to focus on the kids, but sometimes the adults can bully directly as well as by ignoring and dismissing what a child is telling them. You know, so it's very important as adults that we realize that some of these adults are just grown up bullies and they're still lashing out. And what I also find is that a lot of bullies end up being very insecure people for real. And that's part of the reason why they bully. They're masters of deflection, deflecting the attention off of themselves. They're masters of manipulators, meaning they can manipulate another person out of their well-being. And then they're also master persuaders when they can get other people to jump on board and go along with their program. And a lot of that happens to be rooted in insecurity.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about black children and bullying. If you have a question or comment, give us a call. Let's talk to Donna, calling from Virginia. Donna, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, yes, thank you, and good evening. My opinion on it, and I don't have a suicidal opinion. I have teenage young adults now that I'm raising, four boys. And my opinion is that, and I'm guilty of it myself, is that we are entitling our kids instead of empowering our kids. When I was growing up, and I'm 50 years old now, I mean, we got teased, and we got, you know, we ran, Mom, such is teasing me. Oh, don't tease that person. But nowadays, it's like, oh, my gosh, you know, we got to go get a psychologist, and we have to go get the school supers and all that kind of stuff. And I just think if we just empowered our kids to let them know that they are great, you know, no matter what anyone says and no matter what anyone does, you are still great and you are who God is going to have you to be. I just think it would be a lot different.
You know, that opinion is not uncommon, that there are parents there, I would argue, you know, educators who may have an older view, one would argue a more traditional view of child rearing. As I mentioned, bullying has been around when we just talk about that alone. And some would argue this is how you deal with it when you talk to kids, instead of what I think Donna is suggesting, coddling them. But do you think that in this day and age that's still applicable?
No. Not with social media, as far as being more like a babysitter. With social media being a babysitter for these young people, it's not.
Mm-hmm. Doctor?
What I find is that I hear what Donna is saying. Mm-hmm. It makes sense for that period of time because the community context and community situation was different. We had tight-knit networks at that time to where the child had auntie, uncle, cousins, play aunties, had friends, like real friends. Nowadays, we're so distant. You know, a lot of people would communicate more with virtual friends for likes and hearts and stuff than they do with real flesh and blood people that they have access to. And so when you're in a situation in a context like that, then there's no support. Now the child comes in and say, Mommy, you know, I'm being bullied. The parent doesn't hear that. You know, they might say, okay, you'll be okay. Go back out there.
You're talking about isolation.
Definitely isolation and distracted attention because they're staring at a phone or staring at a computer screen and not listening to their children.
Donna, thank you so much for sharing in this conversation. If you are on the phone, stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're going to continue our conversation about black children and suicide. Not only what's happening, but what can be done about it. Lines are still open. We're taking your phone calls at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. More of this conversation in just a few seconds. Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're talking about suicide and black children. My guests are child psychologist Dr. Jeff Menzies and Lisa Daughtry, a mental health advocate who lost her teenage son to suicide. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. 1-0. Before I go back to the phones, Lisa, though you've been on this program many times, mm-hmm. briefly share with our listeners who are not familiar with your story about the loss of your son. And now that it has been several years, your thoughts looking back on how it has impacted your life as an advocate for mental health.
Sure. With my son, our relationship, we had a close relationship, but I also think that with dealing with mental health, we still, even till now, we're still dealing with as far as still not having that able to talk to a therapist or talk to someone that can help you as far as giving you resources. At that time, my son, you know, was open, but it was just something he just couldn't really just open up about. I think for him, he's thinking of himself as a young man. Not, he might feel that he's probably soft, not able to deal with it himself. And I know he tried to deal with it, but with depression, you keep spiraling down. You're unable to pick yourself up. So you need other resources, like not just your family, but also a therapist. For now, I really do believe that the school system does need therapists, psychologists as far as in the schools to help the students because they're dealing with a lot.
At the time, did you think that a therapist would have helped him? Did you know that he needed to talk to someone?
We had a conversation, but he didn't want to go into details at that point, and I should have stayed on him a little bit more because we had conversations. But I said, okay, just like me, I went through that depression stage. You know, you're about to transition from high school, go into the world, either you're going to go to college or have a job or military, so forth. So it's like you're going through a very strange transition as far as going into adulthood. With him, I think he really tried to focus on trying to handle the situation, and he couldn't.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Jay, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Jay. What's on your mind?
Thank you for having me.
Sure.
I was a young man growing up in Washington, D.C., and I had mental issues. I'm 31 years old right now. I had mental issues early on, but I found that for me, and this don't apply to everyone, but I found that for me, what worked for me is just having somebody to treat you not like something was wrong with you, and going to therapy sessions was horrible because I felt like, okay, well, why is everybody, you know, sitting around me and pat me on my knee and ask me all these questions? Like, just treat me like a regular kid and give me some advice on how to deal with everyday things and don't talk to me and try to figure out what's the problem or what's wrong. Like, take me somewhere that I can have some fun and channel it through laughter and get me to understand that there's nothing wrong, instead of sitting around me and pointing and jotting down stuff. Like, that stuff drove me crazy. Mm-hmm. I found when I spent more time with older people, like older men who was, you know, maybe barbers or in the neighborhood or business owners or stuff like that, it really built my confidence because, and they taught me how to play the dozens. If somebody was picking on me, what to say back or how to defend myself if I got in a fight. It was just those simple things. It was those simple one-on-one things that happens, or those rides in the front seat that I got that helped me build my confidence. And I spent several years in the military. I went to college and I'm better off. And I agree with the elderly woman who called earlier. Like, when you got so many doctors involved and telling them, well, write down your feelings and all this, it just complicates things. I think that old school mentality, as like you said, is constantly said, and I think it's constantly overlooked as well.
Well, let me see what Dr. Menzies says, because I was about to say that same thing. He agrees with what Donna said when she called in earlier, when you were talking about looking at things from a more traditional way of child rearing.
Right. And so I no longer practice as a clinician. You know, I do life coaching now, and I used to actually be a school psychologist in the school systems. And what Jay is saying is spot on. You know, what he's pointing out is the lack of cultural competency and a lot of therapists. And so what happens is you get a therapist who can't relate with the person sitting across from them. And also, they're very rigid. They're very programmatic, meaning that they approach it like A, B, C. How might that make you feel? And missing all of the cues and signs that the person that they're working with is not connecting. So I worked with Progressive Life Center for a long time. I did all my clinical training there. And one of the very first things they taught us was to approach and establish harmony. It means that you establish that relationship with the person that you're working with. So in my therapy sessions, what I would do, in fact, they weren't my clients. They were my little brothers and little sisters. And what we would do is play basketball. We would play games for like the first, you know, first five or six sessions. That's what we're doing, because I need to establish that communication. I need to establish that relationship, and I need to let them know that I'm genuine and what I'm doing is very authentic and that I really care. And that's why when Jay went to the barbershops and in the community working with elders, that was filling the void, because now he had adults around him that demonstrated that they actually had concern and care for him, which made him understand. I'm speaking for you, Jay, and I don't think I'm going to be wrong in this, but that he had people around that validated his worth by treating him as a real human being and not somebody that's problematic in their life. Mm-hmm. And that's what a lot of our kids are missing, especially on the home front, you know, in many other contexts. So that's a lot of times it just takes that genuine connection with another person who's wise and has a serious concern about you to help you to stabilize in order that you may go forward and thrive.
Lisa.
Just add this. Even if when you have your initial consultation with your therapist, if you're not feeling that vibe with that, go find another one. You don't have to sit. You don't have to basically have this sessions with this therapist that you picked the first one. If that doesn't work, choose number two, number three, until you're comfortable with the person that you feel, you know, when you come and have your sessions with them, you can, when you close the door, you can cry. You can get angry. They can help you. And like
Dr. Menzies
said, I like how the method they taught you, because that I feel comfortable with, you know, with a therapist that feel like is could be my aunt, my cousin.
Right. Okay. Jay, thank you so much for sharing. I do want to ask, though, Dr. Menzies, would that work in all cases? Because based on what I'm hearing from Jay just now and his story, he sounds like a perfectly healthy human being. Mm-hmm. And indeed, what he got may be what he needed.
Right.
But as you know, much better than I, that there are degrees, levels of mental illness.
Absolutely.
And in some cases, even getting all of the wonderful support that Jay received would not be enough for someone else, even though outwardly they may seem perfectly healthy.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. There are definitely levels to it. And as you're pointing out, some people need different things. It's, you know, regardless of the depth of their issue, it's important to establish that harmony on the front end so that you can even approach the depths that are required to bring some type of balance and hopefully healing to the individual person. And so, yeah, so Jay, he was cool. He had enough. He, with that little bit of support, he was able to go forward and become strong and a productive individual. Some people, I mean, some, you know, depression can, you can be hospitalized around depression, you know, and some people might require medication for their depression. But hospitalization and medication aren't enough. You know, because that would just kind of be like masking, and it makes them feel better in the moment. It might do something to their neurochemistry, their brain chemistry, you know, to keep them functioning day to day. But it not doesn't necessarily do anything to restore the balance and empowering, which is another word we had brought up earlier. It doesn't necessarily empower the individual to negotiate the situations, to clap back if somebody's clowning you. You know, that's one thing I model for my son. You know, somebody come for my son, I demonstrate it. I clown them back. Mm-hmm. I say, you know, this is how you do it. You know, somebody come at you like that, go at them. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's just that sense of support that everybody needs that, but it's not always the cure or what brings somebody out of mental illness.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Juanita calling from District Heights. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi.
Hi.
I've been listening to you all, and I agree with a whole lot of what I'm hearing. There are a couple of points. I am very happy that the taboo on mental illness counseling is lifting. I still think it's very present, though. I also think we need to really look at parenting. You got a lot of bullies who grew up and they got educated or didn't, and they're raising families. And that mentality, that mental stance on messing with somebody else. It's funny to them, and it's being passed on. How do we address that? Because I was teaching girls and a couple of guys, and I see it. And parents, when you call them in, it's not the response that you're hoping for like back in the day. It's almost a joke to them. They'll say something like, well, that child should be stronger, or their parents need to teach them. I got mine. Mm-hmm. Well, how do we address that? That's what I want to know.
That's a really good question. How do educators, how should they address this particular issue when you're talking about bullying and the detrimental effects on young children if they don't take it seriously?
It's unfortunate because, as the sister's pointing out, Juanita, she's pointing out, is that a lot of parents are just adult bullies at this point, and they themselves haven't matured to the point where they can negotiate a situation. And so, of course, they handle it like a child would, like, oh, whatever, I got mine. They need to get that type of attitude. I've seen it. I've experienced it. And it's unfortunate because, as an educator, you are responsible for the pro-social development of the children within your classroom, which is very unfortunate because it's a heavy burden on top of having to teach. My wife happens to be a teacher. And, you know, the comments earlier about the nerd, you know, she's had to deal with that in her classroom. And so what she did is she took time, she took that teachable moment, and they looked up the word nerd in the dictionary and pointed out how everybody, you know, is intelligent and truly passionate about something. And so everybody's a nerd about something. Mm-hmm. And so what you do is you take that individual thing that somebody might be getting bullied about and show how everybody, including the bully, has some aspect of that particular thing in them as well. How do you deal with the parents? We need parent training. We need parent workshops. We need places where parents can get that alleviation, that therapeutic intervention, if they will, so that they too can unpack their bags and become better at parenting their children as well as the village that their child is involved in.
Okay. Thank you so much, Juanita, for your phone call. Let's go to Tazora. Tazora calling from Dallas, Texas. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you for having me. I'm Tazara Moore. I'm actually the founder of Hear My Cry Foundation, which is a suicide mental health prevention organization. And I would like to add a couple of points that need to be highlighted for the African-American communities. And I think in our community, we really do not believe that it is a mental illness is a such thing. I think a lot of times that is overlooked because of the lack of knowledge and the lack of resources that we have in the African-American community. And then another thing I would like to discuss is kids are feeling unsupported due to a single parent home, where the parents is busy trying to get everything together with the home and not really being available for the kids. So if a kid is coming telling their parents, you know, that I'm being bullied, well, the parent is not able to take off of work, you know, saying, yeah, it is important, but due to the stipulations of their job, they're not able to take off of work to go up to the school to see what's going on. So they send an email, but they're not following up, or, you know, they're not giving their kid the type of support that they're actually looking for as an individual. And the last thing is, I think that the schools need to have open communication with mental health and suicide. I think that they feel like if you talk about it, then it will actually encourage students, but it's actually the opposite. If you educating them and letting them know that, hey, bullying could lead to this, this is the reason why we shouldn't be bullying, because it will lead to suicide. And what is suicide? You know, the stages of suicide. I think it needs to be open communication versus not talking about it and sweeping it up under the rug.
Okay, Tazora, thank you so much for sharing with us. We need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Janice calling from Maryland, also Anita calling from Alexandria. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about black children and suicide. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. Tonight we're talking about suicide and black children and the rise in incidents since the 1990s. Of course, this comes on the heels of a 12-year-old girl at a boarding school here in Washington, D.C., who hanged herself yesterday. Let's go back to the phone lines. Let's talk to Janice. Janice calling from... Hey, Janice, how are you? What's on your mind?
I'm fine. I was just talking about this today with a friend of mine. Now, my daughter, she's 15, and we ask each other every day, how was school today? She asked me how was work today. And I agree with the doctor. The parents are not listening to their kids, so they're too busy on the phone, they're on the computer, they're doing whatever, and they're not listening to what their child is trying to say. And that bothers me a lot. So the parents need to be held accountable as well as the principals. The principals, as far as all this bullying going on, they need to have like an assembly once a week or something to let the kids know if you're being bullied or anyone's bothering you or anything, to come to them and talk to them about it. But here's my main question, because first of all, I know if anyone messes with my child, she tell me that she's being bullied, I'm going to be up there in like 5 minutes or less. But my question to you is, should they actually announce, you know, when kids kill themselves, that they hung themselves? Because I was just sitting here talking to someone today. It's like, how do kids even know what to do as far as committing suicide?
Okay.
By hanging themselves.
Well, hold on for a minute, Janice. Let me see if Lisa can share her thoughts about that.
So my son, he hung himself, and I know that he researched it. As far as methods, as far as taking your life. So he had a book and made copies as far as how to create a noose. And with that, I mean, you're basically, it's almost like, as they said, you're falling asleep. So otherwise, if your parents have guns in their house, I mean, that's another way. Or
drugs.
Drugs.
Yeah. Information, unfortunately, for just about anything that anyone wants to know, from baking a cake to anything else, is there, Janice. So I think that, you know, the methods of taking one's life and finding the information, that's not really the issue. I think the issue has to do with preventing our children from considering such a thing. But certainly thank you for sharing and your question. I appreciate it. Let's also talk to Anita. Anita calling from Alexandria, Virginia. Anita, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Sure. I think one of the things that people aren't talking about is that it is very, very different today than it was in the past. Kids today, when we were bullied, we were growing up, we could get away from it. We went home. That's not an option. It's 24/7. Because of the internet, there are kids who are being bullied by adults. I mean, ask yourself this question. When was the last time you worried about someone seeing a bullying incident decades in the future? Bullies are even bullying the children of the parents of kids who killed themselves. There was a case in Loma Linda of a little girl, 13 years old, who was bullied relentlessly 24/7. Her name was Rosalie Avila. The bullies decided to start when she died, and keep in mind, this isn't something they just think up, a lot of kids on their own. Bullies are telling him, we won't stop till you kill yourself. You need to kill yourself. You're a waste of space. The bullies started to post all over social media photoshopped copies of this deceased little girl and started to bully the parents relentlessly.
And let me say, if I may, Anita, as you make that point, we have also seen rigorous prosecution of not only teenagers that are doing the kinds of things that you are discussing, but also parents. We have seen many high profile court cases where something that one group or an individual may find funny, which does indeed turn into a bullying situation, and unfortunately may result in the target of that bullying taking his or her own life. And so I think that the legal system, the judicial system, is beginning to address that and seeing them as not just kids being kids, but actual crimes. But thank you so much for sharing with us and bringing that up. One of the things that I did want to bring up, however, is now, according to this Journal of the American Medical Association Pediatrics research, bullying isn't the only thing. There are other risk factors, as I mentioned earlier, exposure to violence, traumatic stress. One could associate that with bullying, certainly. But also, I think I would say, also as a parent, that early onset puberty, or puberty in general, is a difficult thing for so many children to move through. It was probably difficult for us. Mm-hmm. And I know, you know, it was difficult for my daughter. It was difficult for my daughter's peers. And when we come out on the other side, we are different people, physically and intellectually, emotionally, mentally. From your perspective, doctor, what part does that, might that play in this kind of situation?
Yeah, it's interesting, as you're saying, all these other risk factors that come involved. Without having a strong sense of self, we're totally vulnerable to all those things. You know, we're totally susceptible to, you know, the slightest indication that we don't matter. And again, it doesn't have to be coming from a so-called bully. It could be coming from the media. It could be coming from a lack of people that look like you being represented positively in the media. It can come from the oversaturation of negative imagery in the media. And so without that, and it's one of the, in the same article when they spoke about the other risk factors, you know, they named racism, you know, as one of the indicators. And Dr. Frances Cress Wells, some years ago, wrote an article in a medical journal about how she was, it was a melanin study, you know, the skin pigment. Mm-hmm. And she was saying that how that could contribute to our ability to pick up negative emotions from our environment. And show that that might be the reason why there's increased hypertension, increased, you know, blood pressure and things of that nature. And so when you look at that lack of a core sense of self, a positive cultural identity, as is stated in the article, you know, what you have is a vulnerability there. And without the support networks around you, on top of all this exposure to the media and all this exposure to fake friends, distant friends, virtual friends, and not enough flesh and bone, warm body friends, you know, then you're setting yourself up for big time failure, especially when you got, you know, depression and anxiety prone individuals, you know, in this environment, in this context anyway, man.
So how do we fix this? How do we do a mass intervention with our black children?
Well, I know when my son had took his life, I had initiated a program with his high school, which we took 9th through 12th grades as far as sit down and have a discussion with them as far as dealing with suicide prevention and depression. It got approved by the school board to basically go from K-12. I think for parents, you just don't have to go to your school. You have to go to the school board and basically advocate as far as them initiating a program for the kids. And this should be a program that they have once a year or quarterly, where they can have open discussion about suicide prevention and depression. I mean, they can discuss as far as the signs, what they're dealing with. And it also helps the students deal with, have open dialogue as far as they're dealing with themselves, as far as being able to go and talk to someone, not just their friends, their peers, but go and talk to someone that they feel is safe, a safe person to talk to. And that's a therapist or a teacher or a counselor. Mm. But it
is the next step moving beyond our public school system and out into the community, for example, into our churches.
Yeah, that too is churches as well. I think because with at just recently, I know churches are focusing on mental health awareness. And I know it in the beginning, you know, there was a taboo with that because everyone was like, pray about it, you know. But you're dealing with someone, you don't know the degree of depression they're dealing with for you to just say pray about it, you know, and then leave it to that. Most people, I mean, some need to be medicated and some just need a deep therapeutic sessions with counselors. I mean, to discuss as far as things could have been happened in childhood, you know, where they dealt with exposure to, you know, sexual abuse or rape, domestic violence, so forth like that. But yeah, the church as well.
Mm. I need some resources, if I may, in this last minute or so, where people can look for support. And of course, anything that we share on this program will be posted on WHUR.com after the program. Doctor, you had something that you wanted to suggest.
Right. So the one of the major resources that we have here in the United States, well, actually internationally now, is the Association of Black Psychologists. Website is www.abpsych.org. PSI.org. And so the Association of Black Psychologists is an international association of African American or African psychologists, who many of which are culturally competent and fully capable of connecting and addressing some of these issues as they manifest specifically within the African American community. It's an invaluable resource. I actually currently serve as the president of the local chapter, the DC chapter of it. It's a phenomenal resource, phenomenal organization.
And this goes back to the thing that you were talking about earlier about cultural competency in therapy.
You can't beat that. I mean, and if I can, you know, some of the things as solutions, you know, we have to empower our children with a positive cultural identity. And for a lot of us, that means that we ourselves as adults must find our own positive cultural identity. You know, that's, you know, Dr. Francis Griswold, she had a quote that says that a child's education and by chance a child's healthy development begins before the sperm even meets the egg, meaning that it's a product of the parent's development. And so we have to, as adults, continue to work on ourselves. Another point, we have to show love to our children and show love for our children. Mm-hmm. I mean, like real genuine love. Hug our boys, hug our girls, you know, let them know that they're loved and they're protected.
And Lisa, you had a resource you wanted to share as well.
For DC Department of Mental Health, they have a comprehensive emergency psych service, 202-561-7000. And there's always the suicide hotline, which is open 24 hours, is 800-784-243.
784-2433. Those resources will be posted on WHUR.com, as always, around 8:30 or so. So for those of you who are listening and are looking for support, you can find that information there. Dr. Jeff Menzie and Lisa Daughtry, thank you both so much. I really appreciate you coming and sharing with us tonight.
Thanks for the invitation, bro.
Well, that is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141 for this Wednesday, January 24th, 2018. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.